Good morning. My name is Paula Baptiste Floyd, and I'm a sixth grade reading teacher at the Butler Middle School. Would you please stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance with me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. You can be seated. One of my favorite activities is reading aloud to my students. We have enjoyed some amazing books over the years. Wonder, A Wrinkle in Time, Bud Not Buddy, The BFG, just to name a few. The practice is deeply rooted in my home life, too. For years, my children and I would grab a couple of books and snuggle up on the couch and each take a turn reading a page. We would turn off the TV and tune out the world every evening. This is a cherished memory in our family. Today, you are all my kids, and I'd like to share a couple of stories with you. The first selection is entitled Thank You, Ma'am, and was written by Langston Hughes. Hughes was born in 1902 and died in 1967. Born in Joplin, Missouri, he traveled around a lot when he was a kid. He found that through his writing, he was able to cope with all these changes in address and also deal with the challenges of being an African-American man at that time in history. Just after graduating high school, his first poem, The Negro Speaks of Rivers, was published in 1921. Hughes won a number of prizes and even earned a college scholarship through his writing. His first book of poetry was published in 1926. He went on to write fiction, plays, and essays, as well as translating other poets. He was also a collector of African American folklore. Our story is set in the early 1900s, the turn of the 20th century. The city, New York. The neighborhood, Harlem. Harlem was surging in population at this time, as were many other urban neighborhoods. In order to deal with the housing shortage, single-family homes were made into multiple-family dwellings. Each room would be an apartment and contain a bed and a kitchenette. A kitchenette is a small kitchen area, including a small refrigerator, or icebox as they were known at the time, and a hot plate, which is a single burner you plug in the wall. It would be big enough to cook one pot of food on at a time. Let's get to our story. Thank You, Ma'am, by Langston Hughes. She was a large woman with a large purse that had everything in it but a hammer and nails. It had a long strap, and she carried it slung across her shoulder. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and she was walking alone when a boy ran up behind her and tried to snatch her purse. The strap broke with a single tug the boy gave it from behind. But the boy's weight and the weight of the purse combined caused him to lose his balance. Instead of taking off full blast as he had hoped, the boy fell on his back on the sidewalk and his legs flew up. The large woman simply turned around and kicked him right square in his blue jean sitter. Then she reached down, picked the boy up by his shirt front, and shook him until his teeth rattled. After that, the woman said, "Pick up my pocketbook, boy, and give it here." She still held him, but she bent down enough to permit him to stoop down and pick up her purse. Then she said, "Now ain't you ashamed of yourself?" Firmly gripped by his shirt front, the boy said, "Yes'm." The woman said, "What did you want to do it for?" The boy said, "I didn't aim to." She said, "You a lie." By that time, two or three people passed, stopped, turned to look, and some stood watching. "If I turn you loose, will you run?" asked the woman. "Yes'm," said the boy. "Then I won't turn you loose," said the woman. She did not release him.
"Lady, I'm sorry," whispered the boy.
"Mm-hmm. Your face is dirty. I got a great mind to wash your face for you. Ain't you got nobody home to tell you to wash your face?"
"No'm," said the boy.
"Then it will get washed this evening," said the large woman, starting up the street, dragging the frightened boy behind her. He looked as if he were 14 or 15, frail and willow wild, in tennis shoes and blue jeans. The woman said, "You ought to be my son. I would teach you right from wrong. Least I can do right now is to wash your face."
Are you hungry?
No'm,
said the being dragged boy. I just want you to turn me loose. Was I bothering you when I turned that corner? Asked the woman.
No'm.
But you put yourself in contact with me, said the woman. If you think that that contact is not going to last a while, you got another thing coming. When I get through with you, sir, you are going to remember Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. Sweat popped out on the boy's face and he began to struggle. Mrs. Jones stopped, jerked him around in front of her, put a half Nelson about his neck, and continued to drag him up the street. When she got to her door, she dragged the boy inside, down a hall, and into a large kitchenette-furnished room at the rear of the house. She switched on the light and left the door open. The boy could hear other roomers laughing and talking in the large house. Some of their doors were open, too, but he knew he and the woman were not alone. The woman still had him by the neck in the middle of her room. She said, "What is your name?"
"Roger,"
answered the boy. "Then, Roger, you go to that sink and wash your face," she said, whereupon she turned him loose at last. Roger looked at the door, looked at the woman, looked at the door, and went to the sink. "Let that water run until it gets warm," she said. "Here's a clean towel."
"You gonna take me to jail?"
asked the boy, bending over the sink.
"Well, not with that face. I would not take you nowhere," said the woman. "Here I am, trying to get home to cook me a bite to eat, and you snatch my pocketbook. Maybe you ain't been to your supper either, late as it be. Have you?"
"There's nobody home at my house," said the boy.
"Then we'll eat," said the woman. "I believe you're hungry, or been hungry, to try to snatch my pocketbook."
"I wanted a pair of blue suede shoes," said the boy.
"Well, you didn't have to snatch my pocketbook to get some suede shoes," said Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones. "You could have asked me."
"Ma'am?"
The water dripping from his face, the boy looked at her. There was a long pause, a very long pause. After he dried his face and, not knowing what else to do, dried it again, the boy turned around, wondering what next. The door was open. He could make a dash for it down the hall. He could run, 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 run. The woman was sitting on the daybed. After a while, she said,
"I were young once, and I wanted things I could not get."
There was another long pause. The boy's mouth opened. Then he frowned, not knowing he frowned. The woman said,
"Mm-hmm. You thought I was going to say but, didn't you? You thought I was going to say but I didn't snatch people's pocketbooks." "Well, I wasn't going to say that."
Pause. Silence.
"I've done things, too, which I would not tell you, son, neither tell God if he didn't already know. So you sit down while I fix us something to eat. You might run that comb through your hair so you will look presentable."
In another corner of the room, behind a screen, was a gas plate and an icebox. Mrs. Jones got up and went behind the screen. The woman did not watch the boy to see if he was going to run now, nor did she watch her purse, which she left behind on her daybed. But the boy took care to sit on the far side of the room, where he thought she could easily see him out of the corner of her eye if she wanted to. He did not trust the woman to not trust him, and he did not want to be mistrusted now.
"Do you need somebody to go to the store?" asked the boy. "Maybe to get some milk or something?"
"Don't believe I do," said the woman, "unless you just want sweet milk yourself. I was going to make cocoa out of this canned milk I got here."
That will be fine," said the boy.
She heated some lima beans and ham she had in the icebox, made the cocoa, set the table. The woman did not ask the boy anything about where he lived or his folks or anything else that would embarrass him. Instead, as they ate, she told him about her job in a hotel beauty shop that stayed open late, what the work was like, and how all kinds of women came in and out, blondes, redheads, and brunettes. Then she cut him a half of her 10-cent cake. "Eat some more, son," she said. When they finished eating, she got up and said, "Now here, take this $10 and buy yourself some blue suede shoes. And next time, do not make the mistake of latching on to my pocketbook nor nobody else's, because shoes come by devilish like that will burn your feet. I got to get my rest now, but from here on in, son, I hope you will behave yourself." She led him down the hall to the front door and opened it. "Good night. Behave yourself, boy," she said, looking out into the street. The boy wanted to say something other than, "Thank you, ma'am," to Mrs. Luella Bates Washington Jones, but although his lips moved, he couldn't even say that as he turned at the front of the barren step and looked up at the large woman in the door. Then she shut the door. Wow. Were you surprised by Mrs. Jones' actions? I mean, here's this boy who tries to steal her purse, and she invites him into her house for dinner. She tells him to wash his face and comb his hair. Why do you think she did that? And what did she mean when she said, "I were young once and wanted things I could not get"? She didn't say "but." What does that lead you to believe? Why was Roger so surprised by that? It was also interesting that Mrs. Jones didn't push Roger to talk about his life. It sounded like it might have been a tough life. She just told him stories about her life. Have you ever been treated kindly when you didn't really deserve it? How did that make you feel? Do you think this will change Roger? I wonder what his adult life might be, based on this run-in he had with Mrs. Jones. I like that story. It had a really unexpected twist. I also wonder if people today would go out of their way to treat the Rogers of this world with the same kindness, forgiveness, and even respect that Mrs. Jones did. I sure hope so. It gives me a lot to think about as far as how I treat others. The second story that I'll be sharing with you is kind of a silly one. It's entitled Albert's Bad Word. It's written by Audrey Wood. Here we go. One afternoon at an elegant garden party, young Albert heard a word he had never heard before. The word floated by like a small storm cloud. It was ugly and covered with dark, bristly hairs. With a swift flick of his wrist, Albert snatched the word from the air and stuffed it into his back pocket. Forgetting about it, the boy went on his way, but the word waited patiently. When Aunt Isabella sang opera in soprano, the word made itself small and flew into Albert's mouth like a little gnat. That's when the trouble began. Chives, the butler, tried to balance too many trays of deviled eggs. He dropped them all on Madame Friata's gown. Madame Friata spilled her spritzer on Sir Hilary's bald head. Sir Hilary threw his croquet mallet up in the air. Then, with a terrible thud, the mallet landed on Albert's great toe. Albert opened his mouth to scream, but the bad word sprang out, bigger and uglier than before. Everyone at the party was shocked. They couldn't believe their ears. "Come with me, young man," Albert's mother said with a frown. The word made itself small again, about the size of a rat, and followed in the boy's shadow. In the lavatory, Albert's mother handed him a bar of soap. "We do not say bad words," she said. "Clean it out of your mouth and never use it again." While Albert scrubbed his tongue, the bad word sat on his shoulder, snickering wildly. Albert knew something had to be done. He ran down a cobbled path, past the reflecting pool, beyond the gazebo, and knocked at the gardener's cottage. The gardener, who was also a practicing wizard, opened the door with a smile. "Come in," he said, "and bring that thing with you." The wizard gardener knew right away that Albert had caught a bad word and needed a cure. Opening his desk, he pulled out a drawer filled with words that crackled and sparkled. "Sometimes we need strong words," he said, "to say how we feel. Use these, and perhaps you won't get into trouble." Taking the sparkling words from the drawer, the wizard tossed them in a bowl with flour and honey. He added some raisins, milk, and eggs, mixed them all together, then baked a little cake. The cake was delicious, so Albert ate every last crumb. And as he did, the ugly word shriveled to the size of a flea and hopped onto his necktie. Everyone was enjoying Cousin Rudolph's oboe solo in D minor when Albert returned to the party. But soon, the trouble began anew. Chives the butler tripped on Madame Friata's feathered boa. Madame Friata dropped her chocolate mousse onto Sir Hilary's bald head. Sir Hilary threw his croquet mallet up in the air. Then, with a terrible thud, the mallet landed on Albert's great toe. The music stopped. Everyone stared at the boy. Albert's face grew red with anger. "My stars! Thunder and lightning! Rats in blue blazes! Suffering cats! Blistering hop toads! Zounds and gadzooks!" he shouted. Oh, everyone breathed a sigh of relief and gave Albert 3 rousing cheers. But no one was more pleased than Albert. As the music began again, he saw something that looked like a little spider scurrying down a dark hole and disappearing. And there you have it, Albert's bad word. That sounded like a very fancy party that they were attending, didn't it? What clues gave that away? And it sounds like a very fancy house, too. They had a gardener who actually lived on their property. I feel like the wizard wasn't so magical as that he just gave some really good advice. Did you catch what that advice was? Sometimes it's easy to let bad words come out, but there are so many better words to describe what we're going through. I think the wizard just gave Albert a lot more word choices instead. Thank you so much for joining me today to listen to some stories. My friends, take time to read every day. It's one way you can travel the world, traveled forward or backward in time, and live in someone else's mind for a while. Parents, grandparents, if you're listening, take this unique opportunity to turn off the TV, to silence the phone, to unplug from the world, and to plug into your children. Grab a book and snuggle up on the sofa, a bed, or a piece of the floor. Read with your dear children. Grandparents, be creative. FaceTime, Zoom chat, Google Hangout with your grandchildren, and read to them. These warm memories will live in your hearts forever, and you will foster a love of reading within your child. Have a wonderful day.